Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Women Veterans Speak. Women Veterans Speak Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining us on today. Wow, it's been quite the year for veterans. This is quite the month for celebrating veterans. And we pay tribute to all veterans on this past Veterans Day, those who past, present, and future who are members of our military community. We would like to welcome you all to our Women Veterans Speak Blog Talk Radio program. And we thank you so much for joining us. There is a lot of things that we've had to contend with over the past year or so, and we've not been regularly on our program, but we are just so delighted today that we can talk with someone who has quite the experience. Diane Butts, we would like to welcome you to the show, and just let me just have a moment to just share a little bit about the Women Veterans Speak Blog Talk Radio program, which we started in around 2012. And we were so delighted that we've covered a lot of information on the military community and culture. We also have had tremendous guests from the community who are advocates, legislators, those who have been involved in a discussion on policy and moving our agenda forward. So we're just excited today that we can move in a different direction where we have the movement of Women Veterans Front and Center, where women are taking the front line on many of the issues here as civilians transitioning post-military, with advocacy running for office, legislators, I mean the congressional and the Senate roles, where the military has been a very present conversation and setting agendas on how we as veterans are addressed in our quality of life issues. So we're just delighted to have Diane Butts. We thank you so much for joining us. And
thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. Would you guys like to have an introductory statement here just to kind of identify yourself, if you would? I could go on and on about you, but I think that I would be just a little bit selfish. Mm-hmm. If we just like to share a little bit, just to bring us into what you'd like to talk about with your book. I'm so excited about your book and having read much of it, learned so much about your life, your service to our military, 35 years and your achievements there, and then post-military, how you have been able to help draw the attention on such critical issues as we navigate through the tedious processes for gaining our benefits and our rights as veterans as we try to acclimate to our civilian life. So I would like to just open the floor to you to kind of just open an introduction, a conversation, and then from there I just have a few specific questions I'd like to just to bring attention on some of the specifics I think are relative to our listening audience and for setting precedents on the kind of work that you have done that you may or may not think is important, but I think is extremely important that our audience hear about some of the detailed agendas mm-hmm. that you were able to process through and benefit victoriously. And even those that you may not feel were your end game, but the process itself, it brings attention And as we revisit that in our conversations, it will continue to shed light on some of the needed conversations as we move forward for setting policy and legislation. Okay, Diane, we'd like to open the mic to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Again, thank you for having me. Well, my name is Diane Butts, and but I write a pen name as Lady Zabiri, and it's a story behind that, but I won't share that at the moment. But I've always wanted to be a writer. One, I joined the military when I was 17, and I spent 34 years in the military. And after I was in the military and I did my combat tours, I came back to my point of entry and found I did not have a job. Now, at that same time, I was also applying for all the benefits that were offered to military. And having done all of that, I found it very surprising to know that once I finished a combat tour, that I didn't have a job. And, you know, majority of our forces are in the reserves. So I have some National Guard, Reserve, and active duty years. So the process of trying to get the job back started me writing this book about my experience. And I felt so hurt by how the military, having served in the military and spent all that time in defense of our nation, it seems like the benefit stream should be seamless. You should be able to come on out, get all your benefits, and then go about acclimating yourself to society. But that didn't happen to me. And because that happened to me, I thought about, now I ended up getting a pretty good retirement at the end, but I thought about my fellow comrades who were enlisted. And when you come out of off active duty, your pay is basically cut in half. So it's not enough for you to live off of. So, you know, in the process of me trying to get those benefits, I thought about my comrades and said, hey, if I'm getting this, what's happening to the rest of the folks? And then I found out that the VA and the Department of Labor was not quite servicing our service members very well. So that's what I wrote the book about, all the things that you had to contend with in applying the USERRA laws. And if you don't know what that is, it's the Uniformed Services Employment Rights, Reemployment Rights Act. And that is an agency of the Department of Labor that's supposed to help you to get your job back if you didn't get it back seamlessly from performing active duty. And they help you, but sometimes they don't. So then you are left to dealing with the federal claims court, district court, and just filing, you know, EEOC in order to try to get righteous indignation. So I want to stop there for a minute to see if there might be some questions about, I think I shared my motivation for writing the book. And those who have read it have really enjoyed it, and they can deal with it. Because there's somebody somewhere that's related to you that may have dealt with some employment discrimination along the way. Okay, so I'll pause for a minute.
Okay, so what I'd like to do is make sure that your information is on this call so that as we archive it and promote it on our website, that the information will be made available for future access by those who will listen to the archived edition of this. Could you just share how people can access the book, what your information would be if someone wants to contact you about any particular issue that you'll discuss today on this broadcast?
Okay. The website where you can find the book is on www.outskirtspress.com, and the title of the book, which is Do What to Be What. A telephone number that you can call is 571-264-5748. And that's the number to Diane Butch. But the book is The author is Lady Zabiri. And the co-author is... Hello?
Please go ahead.
The co-author is Deandra Chiafino-Butts. And an email address that you can get to, this was published through Entertainment for Life, LLC. So that email is e4life.january.janoh2016@gmail.com.
Could I just like to ask you a couple of motivating factors that connected your experience that you shared with the Department of Labor and some of the other government entities where you will expect would have some of these answers as you navigated, you found weren't present for you. How did that make the necessary, it gave you the need to write this book, but in that parallel of you, as you was experiencing that, can you share just a little bit about what that experience was for you? Understanding that the government, like which you had trusted and served for 35 years, was missing major components for allowing you to transition, being a achieved, I mean, you were a colonel, a lieutenant colonel, a high-ranking military officer. Can you help us to understand what that experience, you know, from your articulation, what that experience was for you so that people can understand that when we are experiencing this as enlisted, there are no gender-specific roles that our military plays in transitioning? You understand if you understand my question, if I could be more clear. There are oftentimes people come out and say, well, what is your rank? I think civilians oftentimes equate rank with knowledge, or they have less challenges transitioning. Can you just give us a little bit of perspective on what the realities are as a military officer transitioning to learn that the government was missing some major components for assisting with your transition?
Yes. Well, you know, we have the gender and we have the racial aspects of identifying who we are. And you think that once, especially when you're serving the military service, that the military, in a sense, has your back as far as you dedicating your life, putting your life on the line, you and your family, and that once, you know, once you come out of the service, you think that you will be rewarded for your efforts. But unfortunately, it's not always the case. When you are looking to get your job back, for instance, and they find that you are retired military, they're not so kind to you. It's like you already got one. So I think those who have worked in the government and worked in the civilian sector have experienced retired military or former military as an unfair competition, which most folks don't understand. That once you get out of the military and you're not getting all those benefits, like housing, for example, or clothing allowance, you come back, you don't have enough to maintain your standard of living. It's not even just the standard of living. It's just that to be able to maintain a living with half the money that you were getting previously. So as I was asking for help to get the job back, it caused me to understand what the laws were pertaining to military. And I found out that the military, you're only protected for 1 year once you come out of the military and you go to your civilian job. But that's an opportunity, which is something I'm still trying to work on. That's an opportunity for the employer to utilize you for 1 year and could develop a case against you, you know, as a poor performer. And then you have to go out and find another job. So that law, I think, is unfair because once you come back out of the military, you're talking about that six months or even longer. The transition period ended up being very long for me. What else did I experience? I experienced when I was trying to get unemployment that was difficult when the law says that you're supposed to get that automatically. So, again, I had to start researching. But in the meantime, there's no income coming in. So I'm getting very anxiety-ridden. So I ended up getting diagnosed with PTSD and some other issues. You know, I had high blood pressure already, so that wasn't a bigger deal, but it got more extraneous, you know, as I'm trying to find money to take care of my household and utilizing all my education and so forth to get the job back. And then, you know, when you start to get sick, you're not able to work. So, and that's where the military came in, and fighting that battle was difficult as well. So the anxiety got higher. Anyone's anxiety would get high when they don't have a job to take care of their basic necessities. But when you have served the military, you think, why am I going through this? You know, so you lose your self-esteem. And and me personally, I had a come back to Jesus party. It's like, he knows what I can do. He knows, you know, what my attributes are and so forth. And he made me. He knows everything about me, my every fabric of hair on my head to the bottom of my toes. And so I had to regain self-esteem in order to fight for the benefits. Now, some of that required me going to the EEOC, you know, to fight that, and only to find out that that's not a place to really get any justice. So it got worse and worse and worse. But having faith in God kept me from losing my desire to survive.
Ms. Butts, I'm going to, I'm hoping that we can just take this. This is a half an hour program here, and hope this will just be preliminary to a ongoing episode that I hope that we can kind of frame up some of this discussion. I'm hearing particularly the women in the workforce is a major movement amongst civilian women. I'm thinking because the Department of Labor was quite entrenched in the veterans community, back in 2009 or so, facilitating the Homeless Women Veterans Listening Session, there they were able to compile much data for launching this trauma guide, which is referred to by the Department of Labor for as a toolkit for helping providers and leaders understand some of the dynamics within the veterans community, even beyond homelessness. I facilitated for the Region 3. My question to you is, do you think there are specific concerns that need to be addressed pertinent to the women veterans community that may or may not be in alignment with some of the more mainstream conversation for women in general with regard to please?
Absolutely. It is one thing to write a law and say people are treated equally, and then it allowed, you know, they were, when I came in 1975, there was a campaign to draw women into the military. But once you got there and it was more integrated, the standards changed. So women had to fight even harder. But, and because women are isolated, sometimes it's okay to have one or two women in a department, and you tend to be isolated. And, of course, a lot of laws have changed for MOS and even fighting in combat, which I don't agree with, because women do have different attributes than men. But what is not so different is their ability to learn and apply knowledge. And you find that women are usually more educated than the male counterparts, but yet they don't necessarily get the opportunity to get the jobs that's commensurate with their education. And then there's the physical aspect of it. And women have met that and by far exceeded some others, but as far as being treated fairly, it's not across the spectrum. And then when it comes to you getting out of the military, and see, when men have children, it doesn't affect them. per se. They'll go ahead and send the dependent pay through their bank, but they're not responsibility necessary for the custodial responsibility for the children. But women who are working usually have the custodial responsibility and working. So sometimes a supervisor can make it a little more difficult for that person to take care of their child and work the long hours as our male counterpart. So there's some unfairness going on there. But yet there's even more unfairness when it comes to once you get out of the service. Now, if there's a man there taking care of a family, yes, his income is cut in half when he comes off. And we oftentimes have a lot of females who are single parents. So that makes the dynamic even more engrossed, if you will. And that means that you come out of the military, you got half the money, then you got your child to take care of. The father may be there and he may not. And then you find yourself homeless. You don't have a place to live. And then some of these places don't take women with children. And so a lot of the stereotypes are added to that person or to that woman, and she's even more isolated and feeling her self-esteem is even further down, you know, like I'm not a good parent, I can't provide, etc. So, and then to pull out of that, it's embarrassing. You know, you achieved, and you had leadership in the military, and you did some jobs that, you know, compared to the civilian sector, are more intense and require a lot of training, education, etc. Then you come out and it's like, okay, you want to get a job. And you find that all of your military skills were not necessarily as easily transferable over into the civilian sector.
I'm going to take a minute to add some insight to this particular dialogue. There, this issue that you're speaking to have multi dimensions in how it's being addressed at every level of government, in my experience. And it is unfortunate that you are speaking, it sounds like, from a very isolated place where there was either no offer of help or there was no resource where you actually had access to where this help was. And that's very important in transitioning. Now, I have you on this particular program to talk about the book, and I think that if you are willing to, that we can get more into the book, because I think that book gives strength to any listening military person who has had some transitioning challenges, which is where I think your book was in my reading would be a good place to start for anybody to understand what some of the challenges are, but where you can draw a strip, which you alluded to, your spiritual connection. Had you not had God in your life, you would have lost it. And I think that is a very common understanding amongst veterans today. There has to be something bigger than us, that which we can anchor. You know, otherwise we're just tossed here and there. But in that said, we just have just 5 minutes left in the program, and I really want to just let you know that what this conversation means for me. It means more than you know, because I hear so many missing pieces of what you had to suffer through that actually do exist. And what it also says to me is that as much as people are offering help, there is some disconnected and very flawed systems here that is intended to minimize the suffering of veterans transitioning, but somehow with what your experience has described, it actually compounds. And that's what I have been trying to address for many, many years. There are compounded issues over time that in about 20 years, not only have your health issues become something else, but your whole presentation. And many veterans who are telling their story today, they're compounding that 20-year experience and trying to articulate that to anyone who would listen. And they're being diagnosed as having a mental condition because they have that capacity to not only retain that level of information, but to articulate that level of information. And most people who do not understand the military culture are misinterpreting what people are saying with no point of reference as being something else, when it's actually these issues which have compounded over the years, ignored or not being understood, when the veteran has been trained with a mental capacity to not only absorb all of these different dynamics, but to compartmentalize it in such a way that they can coexist with these dynamics and function, and that they do not have the mental deficiency which they have been portrayed with the stigma of being diagnosed with PTSD and the other different conditions. These are independent of your abilities to exist. You can have PTSD and function at a certain level, but I do believe these issues are compounded, and I think that the psychological community should be realistic in how they identify and labeling and stigmatizing the veteran once they are able to articulate to a medical professional who has no connection, who has no point of reference to the military culture by which they are trying to comprehend, to diagnose, to treat. So in my opinion, I think that you've laid a great foundation for what I hope that you will come back on, and let's have another focused conversation. Let's talk about parts of the book where you actually went through some of these processes that God allowed you that constant, that you were able to hold on to, that was the anchor as you were tossed through it throughout a system that is systematically flawed to the point where if it is not looked at realistically from the position of women veterans, that there will always be a misconstrued or a distorted perspective by those who tend to offer us help. Good intentions are wasted by just a misunderstanding of what we are about. I would like to conclude that we just have a couple of minutes, and I'm going to give you the last minute or two to finish. But Women Veterans Front and Center is the reason why this program must go forward, and we will continue to have this conversation as often as we must to keep our conversation to the forefront and speaking to those different powers and entities that must be held accountable for what their role is in our lives. So, Ms. Butt, I just want to let you know that I appreciate your time on this program. I think it has been very valued for drawing some analogies. Realistically, how do we approach the next phase of our coming from the Women Veterans Front and Center? So you will have the last minute to explain that, and we will be winding up our show. Thank you so much for joining us. Ms. Butt, please, the mic is yours for the last minute of the program.
Okay. I would like to mention that I took the time to write a story and then compartmentalized it into 9 chapters. And it goes from the introduction and into the different phases that you might have to deal with, such as the USARA laws that I mentioned earlier, filing a claim, and then that's when I came to the spiritual implications. So I had to do some research on that. And the title for that chapter was, What Does God Say About Filing Lawsuits? Because I was unclear, and I figured that other people would be unclear as well. You know, do you fight for righteous indignation? And then I go on to talk about the federal claims court, and there's a different federal district court, and then the financial implications. But one thing that most veterans are familiar with is, you know, when we do combat missions, we have an objective. We have the missions, and we detail how we're going to execute the mission. And then after the mission is complete, we have a lessons learned. So chapter 9 talks about things that I wished I had considered before even embarking upon a working career. So I think this is beneficial for not only veterans, but particularly veterans, for, you know, knowing things that they should have known, or, you know, if somebody would have shared that. And we don't necessarily do a good job of making sure our veterans know, and particularly our women veterans know what it is that they have at their fingertips. So I thank you for allowing me to be on here today.
You have been phenomenal, and thank you so much. It was a half-an-hour show. We will give you more time, hopefully, to really flesh out some of the details. I think this is a good place to start. The show has ended. I'm just going on with you. This part of the program, others cannot hear. But I think that you have an awesome delivery. But the framing up to simplify to the less educated mind on some of the processes is paramount, you know, for getting over those different hurdles that we deal with. I think it's important that, you know, Women Veterans Speak, we started this program in 2012. I was doing it every Monday. And at one point, there was 8,000 listeners on this show. I believe that if we continue with the kind of information, if we continue with the kind of information that you are bringing out, we can get our listening audience up. And not only that, we can change lives. You know, so I'm going to just continue to encourage you and thank you for your service and really to, you know, let you know the importance of what you've done. You know, it's so valuable to my life personally, and I know that this is invaluable to the women veterans population as a whole. We go through it not because for any reason or that we should have to. These are hurdles that are beyond our control. You know, and some of them may be by design. You understand what I'm saying? But we have got to take this thing by the horns and own it. You know, Women Veterans Front and Center is a real agenda. And if you can sense the importance, I hope you will see the need for your voice out here. I'm going to continue to reach out to other women and get them more involved. You know, we planned this with short notice. Oh, but we can raise this the awareness. Once again, that this program is on. This is probably one of the very few shows like this, Women Veterans Speak. I started this show several years ago, and you can go to some of the archive shows, and we can help you set your own show up if you want to. But I just want to talk about, you know, your book is a phenomenal book, but I really want to see at your availability when you'd like to get back on his program, you know. And we can push this thing, and we're going to push that book and get that book out there so people can get access to it and really learn about what it takes. What does it take, you know, to get through when the VA and all these other trusted entities that you look for answers, you know what I mean? These answers are missing. They're missing. You got to find them yourself, or, you know, you got to create a path. You know what I mean?
Right.
Without stepping on a landmine, you know, repeatedly, you know, and next thing you know, years have passed and you've been wasted much of your life, you know, navigating a system that has no intention of ever satisfying or remedying your pain and suffering of military service. You know, that's my spiel on that, you know, and I get very adamant about, you know, my own experience. But to hear you speak, you have said what my experience is. I would never have been able to articulate it from that position, you know, but I'm just saying, we got to do this thing together. So I hope you'll find the time in the future just to give a half an hour, whatever time that you will have, to really take this to a next level. I have an idea on where the next conversation, and we're going to have this as a podcast that we can promote as several episodes to follow, where the answers to these questions are being actually identified and recognized with a title, you know, so people can actually go and listen and look for certain content, knowing that the answers has already been established, you know, through these conversations. And I hope you'll consider that in the future. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much.
All right.
Well, the show ended, and I'm going to catch up with you later on. I'm going to get me something to eat. I may try to get on the road to get down there today, but I need to get this here documented, this conversation. And I'll tell you why when I talk to you again. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again. Actually, it just... Sometimes you get motivated by somebody who's motivated. You know what I mean?
You're right.
You know,
you're motivating me. A willing vessel. That's all God asks, is that you be willing. You know, He'll give us the ability, and I think that's what happened. You know, you and I both challenge, you know, in our day to day. You know, sometimes, you know, we hit or miss. You know what I mean? But the days that we hit, you know, and that's what we're going to hold on to pass this baton on. I mean, these people need to know. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. And I have some other things that I want to bring out from this conversation. I'll be listening to this over again and take my notes for the next broadcast. And we are seeing when your availability is to get back on here to do another episode so that we can do a series to get to an end objective here and how these particular issues, transitioning is key. That major gap in services, the major gap when transitioning for survival, you know, your finances ain't right. That's where is crucial, you know, when people are trying to transition, being diagnosed, waiting for a rating, you know, a compensatory rating, to be identified, diagnosed, and treated. Huh. You know, where can we get, how can we expedite that? Where are the answers at? We're going to put those answers on this broadcast.
Mm-hmm. Yep, because and I know you want to go. When I was looking for help, it's like, okay, I can't get it. You know, we don't do this. And only to find out 3 years after I had gotten off of active duty as an OEF, OIF veteran, that I had 5 years worth of medical awaiting for my use. But I didn't know it until I was identified as a, I went to the emergency room. I was identified as a as having PTSD. And I said, I do? Really? Seriously? So, and it's not just an individual incident. If you spend a lot of time in the military, you've adapted a different way of life. And it's not going to necessarily transition very easily. Most of the time it doesn't. Anyway, there you go. All right, lady. Go get your work done.
It was a very good show. Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I'll send you a recorded copy.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.